There is one global business which is highly lucrative and rarely discriminates. Sadly, it is a business built on the evil trade of human lives. And traffickers prey on people of all nationalities, backgrounds, and ages. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we're going to look at why, despite more funds committed to stopping, the human trafficking business is generating more than $150 billion in illegal profits across the globe, and why there is not more of a global push to stop the trade of our most vulnerable, the children. Let's get started. The International Labor Organization's latest global estimates of modern slavery calculated 49.6 million people at any time are victims of forced marriage or forced labor. Now, additionally, 6.3 million are forced into commercial sexual exploitation. There is no region, country, or continent which has eradicated the trafficking industry from its area. Now, the Asia and Pacific region has the highest number of victims of forced labor and marriage, accounting for more than half of the global total, 29.3 million. But the most prominent type of trafficking might depend on the part of the world. Now, there are three main types of exploitation of victims: sexual, forced labor, and other. Now, I want to start in Africa. Now, this is where forced labor is the most common form of exploitations. While here in the Americas, East Asia, and the Pacific, victims are predominantly women who are being subjected to sexual exploitations. However, in the Pacific, in the East Asia, child trafficking is a higher prevalence than the Americas. Now, in the Americas, human trafficking victims are predominantly women subjected to sexual exploitation. The same is true of East Asia and the Pacific. However, there is a higher prevalence of child trafficking than in the Americas, which brings us to America, where the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children logged more than 19,000 child sex trafficking cases in the United States alone, many of those through the southern border between Mexico and the United States. So why are countries having such a difficult time solving this crisis? And while many elected officials talk about it, is stopping the human trafficking trade really a priority? Joining me now to discuss is Sheena Rodriguez, who is the president of the Alliance for a Safe Texas. And for nearly 2 years, Sheena has made frequent visits to the Texas border from the Rio Grande Valley area, Roma, La Jolla, Laredo, El Paso, and she spent several months focusing on the Del Rio sector. When not at the border, Sheena can be found at the Texas Capitol, attempting to influence legislation to help fortify Texas and the southern border. Thanks for joining us, Sheena. You know, is the world being given an accurate view of what the situation regarding the southern border of the United States in regard to who is crossing, how many are crossing, and what is happening to not only those who reside in Texas, but also those who make it across?
Yes. So thank you. I appreciate that question so very much. Unfortunately, no. For whatever reason, most of the coverage of any border within the United States and the apprehensions that we're seeing is not being covered. In just 3 years, fiscal years alone, and actually we still have a few more months left of this fiscal year, 2023, we have seen over 6 million apprehensions in the United States. 6 million. That is more than the population of more than nearly 30 states. Worth that we are seeing encountered, and that's just the known encounters. That's not including the known gotaways and the gotaways that are unknown, so the ones that are not apprehended or encounter CBP, Customs and Border Protection, or otherwise known as Border Patrol. And unfortunately, like, we just had just earlier this week, just yesterday, I believe it was, that our Governor Greg Abbott just had a press conference down along the southern border here in Texas, where I'm at in Texas, with representing nearly 25 governors of different states, demanding that border security is pushed to the top as a priority because of this massive influx that we are seeing. It's absolutely unprecedented. And yet the media was, for the most part, pretty quiet. This is unprecedented measures. Nearly half of the country, or actually half of the country, standing together and saying enough is enough. This is unsustainable. We cannot take this. Our resources are dwindling. We don't have anything left to give. And yet there are caravans of thousands of more coming through the Darien Gap right now as we speak. And yet there's no end in sight. And then from there, once they're apprehended along the border, they are then bussed into or flown into, transported into, using United States taxpayer dollars into the interior. They're not just staying along the southern border or the northern border. They're bussed into the interior. I have met so many from various countries all over the world along my adventures and along the southern border. And yet the media remains silent. They may see when we had some called it the Haitian invasion down in the Del Rio sector where the Haitians were underneath the bridge. And it was about 14 to 20,000 people. That got minimal coverage, yet that is a snapshot of what occurs on a daily basis. So for whatever reason, unfortunately, no, the American people in the world is not being told the truth of what's occurring.
Many countries have issues with those illegally crossing the border. Why isn't the truth being shared? It's not like the United States is the only one dealing with this issue. Why are those who bring up the issue demonized?
Another fantastic question. You are 100% right. What we are encountering here in the United States is not exclusive just to the United States. Europe and all over the world is dealing with mass migration movements. And this is irregular migration. And the reason why we are seeing this, honestly, is because of the UN. And it is because of the Global Compact of Migration, where the powers that be on the global scale want open borders. They want this massive shift. And there's various that they will cite climate change being the reason why I forget their talking points, the climate disasters and that are occurring. But these are events, hurricanes, storms, flooding. These are events that have always happened, right? But what is happening is that the United States is the number one funder, and that's how this is so tied to the United States, even though this is a global issue. But we are the number one funder for the UN. And then you have NGOs, non-governmental organizations that operate on the international level and throughout the various levels here in the United States and throughout the Darien Gap, that are helping this mass migration, irregular mass migration movement that we're seeing across the world. Why? When people need to be asking themselves why. I cannot tell you exactly why, what their motivation is. I can tell you, however, that no one is winning. Absolutely. What I have seen is this is the mass exploitation of human beings on a global scale. No one is winning except for the criminal cartel organizations, the NGOs that are receiving billions upon billions upon billions of dollars to help to facilitate this, and the global elites that want to see this happen. And when you start to naturally get to the question of why, and why then are those who are speaking out against this and pointing out how not humanitarian this is and the various issues that this causes, consequently you are demonized. I have been called a traitor. I am of Hispanic descent. I've been called a traitor of my own people. I am constantly, just right here in my own state capital of Texas, where I try vigorously to try to fortify our state as much as legally and constitutionally possible, it is usually me and a handful of others up against, I kid you not, busloads that are brought in that want to help open the borders more and fight against everything that we push forth to try and secure our sovereign border as much as possibly in our state legislature. And I have been demonized. I've been threatened. It's outside of just it boiling it down to evil motivations. I really cannot give you a sane answer as to why this is allowed and why those who are earnestly trying to do the right thing and to stop this mass exploitation, that is absolutely unsustainable. I do not have another another answer for you outside of just evil undertones.
When trafficking is discussed, we most often hear referenced the movement from South America into the United States. But is trafficking occurring just one way across the border?
That's a very good question. So anyone who has ever been involved in anti-trafficking knows that the border, northern, southern, along the seas and in the Gulf, has always been a hub for trafficking in both directions. That's nothing new. Again, what's new is the massive rate and the unprecedented measures by which it's happening and occurring now, currently. But a lot of what we're seeing, so I do not have any statistics on any trafficking measures that's going outside of our borders now, because obviously the focus is the human trafficking and the human smuggling that's occurring going into the United States. However, what I can tell you is that there is a growing number. One of the most common things, especially getting into Mexico, is the trafficking and smuggling of drugs and guns and money. So while people are coming this way and drugs are coming into the United States, often what we're seeing going south or north or whichever border you're at is the drugs and the money, the contraband, things of that nature. And that is escalating and skyrocketing. And once again, benefiting who? Benefiting the criminal cartel organizations and the transnational organizations that are operating not just in Mexico, but around the world.
Thank you, Sheena. Now, after the break, we are going to ask Sheena to share with us what she personally has witnessed happening at the border and why it seems no one is wanting to help the children who have been forced into trafficking.
Known in Vietnam as the American War, the Vietnam War lasted for almost two decades and dragged in numerous countries.
Nhưng mà người cầm đầu của Mỹ nói rằng sang Việt Nam là như thế giúp Việt Nam. Và thì còn anh em thì không thống kê được.
Hundreds of thousands of American troops were sent to the country to back the South Vietnamese Army.
Má bay nó rồi nó xả.
American soldiers murdered resistors mercilessly, burned down entire villages, and spread dangerous chemicals.
Cần nghĩ lại những người Mỹ, những người lính Mỹ rất trẻ và họ nhận thức không ấy.
Did the Americans ever fully acknowledge what they did, and are the Vietnamese veterans ready to forgive?
Cảm nhận là gia đình chúng tôi mất mất trong chiến tranh. Mà cả quê hương đất nước cũng bị mắc mờ trong cái sự đau thương của gia đình mình.
La Banda Mazzotti non è un gruppo solamente musicale. La Banda Mazzotti è un gruppo di lavoratori comunisti che cerca di cambiare questa società. Il primo viaggio che abbiamo fatto con la carovana antifascista in Donbass era settembre del 2014.
E noi portiamo penne, matite, materiale per orfanotrofi e materiale per curare le persone nelle città, cosa che i nostri governi non fanno, inviano solamente bombe.
Ci siamo ritrovati ad andare in Palestina, in Siria, in Donbass, in moltissimi paesi e ci siamo resi conto che eravamo forse l'unico gruppo musicale che andava là a sostenere una lotta, non a suonare.
Welcome back. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes, and you are watching the 360 View. We're going to continue our discussion with Sheena Rodriguez, President, Alliance for a Safe Texas. Sheena, What have you witnessed with your time at the border in regard to the children being brought over?
Well, I've witnessed, I've kind of shared a little bit of some of those stories that I've seen. I think one of the startling things for me, I am a mother. I have two teenagers. One of the startling things that I have witnessed also is the lies that they are being told. These people are being incentivized to come. They're also being incentivized to send their children by the policies that are instituted within my country, within the United States. And so that being said, I think there was one thing that has always stood out in my mind. There was one conversation. It was a woman with she claimed that it was her 2-year-old grandson that crossed over into South Texas. Watched them come over, and we were, you know, having a conversation. And I tend to ask many of the same questions because it's triggering, and there, a lot of them are very forthcoming with their responses and their experiences. And when I asked her, why did you come? She had said that the reason why she came was because of inflation, that she made tortillas back in Guatemala. And because of inflation, she could no longer make a profit selling those tortillas. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, we're fighting inflation here too in the United States. I'm your typical middle-class American. And my husband, who works 2 jobs and I homeschool my daughter, we are struggling to put food on our table, right? So in my head, I'm like, well, why would you then still take this dangerous journey? Most of them tell me, quite frankly, I knew that there was going to be dangers dangerous situations. I didn't know it was going to be this bad. And then she had explained to me that her grandson, which is her daughter, that she had crossed over months before as an unaccompanied minor, and was living in a southwestern state, that she was hoping to rejoin with her. She had explained to me on how she was robbed, on how she was violently raped, on how her and her grandson were trying to dodge bullets from cartel that were fighting in the brush. And so then when I asked her, well, would you come again? She had said that her daughter, who crossed months before, similar things, that they were raped, extorted the entire way coming over. And then when I asked her, so what is your plan now? And she, of course, said that she was going to meet up with her daughter that was living in a southwestern state. And then she said that she was going to save up money to send for her 14-year-old daughter to come the same route. Now, mind you, she had told me this as an unaccompanied minor, and she had told me this shortly after explaining to me when I asked them, would you do it again? Would you do it again? So those who are coming here, what would you say to them? And she says, don't do it. Don't come. Don't do it. Don't come. But then just moments later, she's explaining to me that she intends to save up to bring her 14-year-old daughter to take the same treacherous journey, knowing full well what the high, very high likelihood of the abuse and the rape that her daughter, impossible death that her daughter may encounter along the route. So it's mind blowing to me that this is happening. People ask me all the time, why are people sending their children? I know from many of the countries that I've seen coming over, many of them are not in wars. You know, we've seen here in America, we saw with the Afghanistan debacle, people lifting their children and handing them to the United States soldiers over sea wire, concertina wire, razor wire. That is a very destitute situation. I'm in no place to judge. I can't even imagine. But what I do know is that more than 99% of the people that I've encountered, that I've spoken to, by their own admissions, are coming over for economic reasons. These aren't necessarily destitute situations. These are that they're looking for a better economic opportunity. And it's hard for me to come to grasp, knowing that they are anticipating and expecting even some type of possibility of a dangerous situation. But even when they're coming over, they're not sending that message back home. They'll tell me and reporters, no, I don't come. Don't come. Women who are crying, girls who have just been raped on the U.S. side in the no man's land, what they call a no man's land, like in Arizona. A friend of mine who's a reporter had captured the moment where this woman walked across the wall. She was just stabbed in the arm because they were trying to, on the United States soil, these criminal cartel gang, they know that this is no man's land. that there's really no jurisdiction, no law enforcement is there, and they robbed them, they raped them, they were attempting to rape her. They had pushed her boyfriend, who she was walking over her side, and because she fought back, they stabbed her. And by the grace of God, she was able to walk around. But then they're not sending those types of stories back home. Instead, what the cartel are promoting is like this travel agency. Come now, these are the routes that you can take. These are the deals that you can get. And see how great it is? They will literally show on social media the clusters of people and how easy it is for them to move them into the U.S. southern border. It's quite frightening and very, very disturbing. So I think and to know that children are being put into these situations because of the policies, it's very disturbing.
Are all youth being trafficked for sexual reasons, or are there actual other purposes?
Right now, with the labor trafficking that's going up, a lot of these unaccompanied minors that are coming over, especially the older ones, 16, 17, you know, a 13-year-old American teenager is far different in many cases than a 13-year-old from Guatemala or Honduras, right? So a lot of them are coming over possibly into labor trafficking. That's why we're seeing this massive spike in the labor trafficking that's occurring. We do not know if anyone that's familiar with the sex trafficking, not just in the United States, but around the world, anyone who's being honest will say that the numbers, the known numbers of cases of sex trafficking are far underreported. It's nearly impossible to be able to get any accurate reporting. But the statistics of that is frightening. But then, of course, you do have other situations where, because our policies are incentivizing it, that they are sending them as unaccompanied minors or forced family separations because they have a better chance of coming in. And then they hope to go and resettle because they have family in New York or in Florida or in one of the Midwestern states or California. And they're hoping it's those incentivizations that are bringing them there. So to be able to say that they're all being brought over for sex trafficking, just simply there's no way to actually measure that. It could be because they are legitimately looking to be reunified for a better opportunity here in the United States with their family that's living here or that is planning on coming up here at some point. But there is, of course, that those clusters, that those percentages of those that are being forced into labor trafficking and then, of course, sex trafficking. So it's kind of various different reasons as to where some of these children may be going or situations where these children may be going in regards to trafficking.
How are families and young people tricked into crossing borders from Africa, Asia, or South America into the developed world? And do they ever escape and make it back home?
There is such a thing as self-deportation. Right. And that's where, and we're seeing this. I've spoken to people who have encountered individuals trying to go back into Mexico. They're like, you know what, this is not what we signed up for. And that did happen under other administrations as well, where if the incentivizations are not there and they cannot make it, then they go back home. Under COVID as well, we saw a lot of that where they were going back to their home countries because many of them lived in rural areas and they thought that would be better for them health-wise. But with regards to, look, I have seen along the southern border in the United States, in Texas and in Arizona, I have encountered people from China, Russia, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Georgia, several different African countries. There's more than 160 countries that are crossing over illegally into the United States. And the reason I can attest to those who have told me by their own admission that they have said that the reason why they came was because they saw essentially like infomercials on programs like Telemundo in Central and South America, for example, saying this is the route to take. This is what you'll get when you'll get there. Now I cannot substantiate those claims, but I can only go by what they're saying. And I have all of this documented. And again, it is a message that is being sent around the world. The United States is open. And it's the same thing like over there in Europe. If the elected officials are not willing to stand up to these global organizations and networks like the UN and the NGOs that are helping to facilitate this, helping to financially assist in this global, you know, movement of irregular migration for the various reasons, it's wide open, and we have nothing to stop it. So that message gets sent across the world. And then there are, it's a whole network with these NGOs. That's where these NGOs are the biggest. It's this whole network. Well, they will show them and tell them, this is where you go. This is how you get there. We'll help you get a plane ticket. I've met people from Russia who have made it to Yuma, Arizona in less than 72 hours, because within 24 hours, they were on a plane, down to Central America. And then from there, they take other planes and buses, again, according to their claims. And I've seen documents where they have these different NGOs say, this is where you go. This is where the consulates are in these countries. This is how you, these are the different NGOs that you can go to for help and aid and resources. This is all orchestrated. It's not like somebody just wakes up from Africa and goes, you know, I want to make it to the United States. And then, then they just magically appear. This is an orchestrated effort. And I know that this is happening across the world. The same thing that we're speaking of is applicable across the world. That's where these NGOs really come into play, is that they help and aid and assist in facilitating this irregular migration, and never once expressing the truth and the dangers that they're going to encounter. And then not just that, the truth of the reality that whenever they get there, we have no resources. Like I said, we can't even take care of Americans. So, and that's why you see the debacle, like in New York City and in Texas, but especially in New York and Massachusetts, where just hundreds are just littering the street because they have nowhere to go, because the reality is we don't have any resources. So I hope that that answers your question. But it's very dire situations. So, and I appreciate your questions. They're phenomenal.
Thank you, Sheena Rodriguez. Now, combating global trafficking requires a sustained and collaborative effort from multiple stakeholders. The action must come from a collaboration between government, individuals, and organizations. Only together it will contribute to the larger goal of eradicating trafficking and the protection of human rights for all. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.